Good morning. You're listening to the KRFY Morning Show on Tuesday, September the 13th. It is a cool, crisp 8 o'clock in the morning, and it's Jack and Phil in the Tiki Room for the very first time.
Good morning, Jack. It's nice to see you here on a Tuesday. I know you stumbled over that a little bit. You might have thought it was Thursday.
I almost said Thursday, yes. I usually am a Thursday morning guy. Tuesday, up at this hour, in the studio broadcasting. Not my usual thing, but,
For those who listen to us every week, you'll miss Julie Kallebein's voice. She's off chasing trout with flies somewhere in Montana, like a good fisher woman. She doesn't say where.
That's correct. She is good at keeping secrets, even from her closest companions. Yeah. before we get into conversation with our guest this morning, who's long-distance trail runner Mike Arrett, let me tell you a little bit about the weather that's been going on and is coming up. We did have a freeze warning in effect until just moments ago. It just ended at 8 o'clock this morning. And that will be the case for tomorrow night as well. Today, high near 71 and sunny all day long with a northeast wind blowing 6 to 11 miles an hour. It will be pretty much more of the same all weekend as far as the forecast goes. Mostly clear and chilly at night, getting down to the frost point tonight and and on tomorrow night, it looks like, as well. It will be sunny. It will be high near 76 on Thursday, 78 on Friday, and up to 80 degrees on Saturday. So, summer weekend.
Sounds like the frost is on the pumpkin. It's time to cover up the tomatoes at night.
The frost is on the pumpkin. That's right. we have a... that's a new phrase for me, Phil. But I like it. We have a guest in the studio this morning, and who is that, Phil?
So Mike is probably well known to a number of local residents, or if you don't recognize his name right off, you will, as we have a conversation with him this morning. But his a short description fails him, really, so we need a longer description. I'm going to read a biography from his website. Mike is a resident of Hope, Idaho, an Army veteran serving from 1979 to 1983 in the Army as a combat engineer. And he's a retired letter carrier from the Postal Service. I'm interested to find out which was a tougher tour of duty. Born severely club-footed in both leg surgeries at the age of 4, corrected this issue and allowed him to lead an active childhood. Physically active since the age of 6 when he circled a playground 16 times to complete a mile for 50 cents to the age of 55, he now estimates he's covered close to 75,000 miles on his feet. Mike has an impressive history of adventure trail running and running in general. In 2006, he ran the Everest Circuit and the Annapurna Circuit in Nepal, a total of 200 miles in 15 days. He's crossed the Sahara Desert twice in Morocco in six-day running events. In 2008, he became one of only 34 people ever to finish the Rocky Mountain Slam, which consists of 4 100-mile trail races in a span of 4 months. In May of 2011, Mike completed a 16-day, 500-mile run across Spain on the Camino de Santiago. In 2012, he completed a fast-pack hike of the John Muir Trail in California. In 2013, he became the 9th person to circumnavigate Mount Kilimanjaro in Africa on foot, running a distance of 180 miles on trail. I'm getting tired just listening to all this, Jack.
Yeah.
We're gonna segue into some of the more recent projects that Mike has created. In 2010, Mike embarked on Project Run America, a self-designed mission, the concept of one life, one flag, 1 mile, to honor fallen American soldiers from the war in Iraq. During this 4,424-mile run, Mike traveled alone with no following or support vehicle. From the Oregon coast to the coast of Maine, he pushed a jogger stroller with flags, running more than a marathon a day and stopping every mile to plant an American flag inscribed with the name, rank, age, and hometown of fallen soldiers. Mike would stay with host families he had been prearranged a year in advance. They were Americans he had never met, and they opened his doors to his mission. That's not all. In 2012, Mike embarked on Project Run America 2, beginning on the Canadian border in Minnesota and ending at the Gulf of Mexico in Texas. Mike ran once more, covering the equivalent of a marathon a day, for over 2 months with no days off, and stopping each mile to plant a flag inscribed with the name of a fallen soldier in Afghanistan. His runs have no political agenda, no statement of protest. They represent one man's personal tribute and memorial to the soldiers and Marines who have died in service to this country. Mike is a certified personal trainer at Sandpoint West, a running coach, and founder of Run 7B. Welcome to the KRFY studios, Mike.
Thanks, Phil.
So tell us a little bit more about how you really got started in long distance running.
It was pretty much with that playground bet.
It was with the playground.
Yes, and then it was.
Propelled rapidly from there.
You know, it's funny. It's like I'll forget people's names that I met yesterday, but I'll never forget Ruben Sotelo, who was a kid who bet me 50 cents I couldn't run a mile.
Do you still keep in touch with him?
I don't know where Ruben is. Probably not. But, you know, and you never forget your drill instructors from the military.
A failed bookie in Las Vegas.
He's a failed bookie, yeah.
So you were bet 50 cents. As how old were you? 6 years old?
I was six, yeah.
And he just said, no way you can do it.
Yeah, we were looking at the playground. I vaguely remember. Ooh, that was a long time ago. we looked around. I said, I bet I could run around this more than once. And he said, I bet you couldn't do a mile. 50 cents, and, which at the time was probably a fortune to me. I was thinking of the ice cream I could buy with it. And away I went. Now, I remember the last lap, he actually tried to slow me down so I wouldn't finish, so he wouldn't have to pay up.
So did you move on to a stellar career in high school as a cross-country runner?
I did cross-country, and with my feet, I knew I was never going to play ball because I didn't have much lateral movement side to side, and I couldn't jump, and I wasn't big enough, and we didn't have place kickers and field goal kickers. So I went into cross-country and track, and then into the military. I was stationed overseas in Germany, which gave me an opportunity to run on dirt. And at the time, there were probably, you know, we didn't know what trail running was. We knew we ran on through the woods and in the dirt and whatever, but it hadn't been labeled yet. Mm-hmm. My first marathon was in 1980 in Athens, finishing at the original Olympic Stadium. But no stellar career, you know, just somebody who liked to stay active.
Mm-hmm. So were you able to continue running during your military career overseas?
Yeah, it was interesting. I actually turned down a chance to go to West Point because of my running. I was told, yeah, we can get you in. And I said, nah, you know what? I really like running too much. Well, you can run at West Point. No, I don't think so.
So how did you end up in the military, in the Army then?
Too many John Wayne movies. Mm. You know, yeah. No, when I was a junior in high school, at the time, I wasn't fast enough to get a scholarship, smart enough to get a scholarship, didn't want to come out of college facing debt, and I wanted to see the world. So I thought, you know, I'll go in the Army. Mm. I signed up a year ahead of time, and then when I graduated from high school, went in.
So what were the years you were in the service?
79 to 83.
So when did the idea to do the Project America Run come to you? How did that dwell in your brain?
You know, it's kind of like when you're hungry and you just ate dinner, and an hour later, you're kind of not full. And I had a sense of that feeling. And I remember sitting in the post office in Crested Butte, Colorado, and I was reading obituaries, actually, and stories of the young people and older people. And it just kind of hit me like a bolt. It says, you know what? You should build a memorial. By God, everybody's got one, you know, and you should do your own. Not that it was about me, it was about them. And so I thought, well, I'll just run across the country. And that wasn't enough. It was had to be more, so I had to put a flag in the ground, and that wasn't enough. It had to be GPSed forever so that the families could view it online and see where a flag was actually placed. And that was enough. So, you know, when it was all said and done, you know, to this day, I look at the country and I see this like invisible wall going east to west, north to south. And, you know, and I look at that and I go, well, you know what? That's a pretty darn good memorial. Even though it's virtual, it's there forever.
So did you communicate with the families?
Not at all.
No.
No. Okay. No, that was like an arena I didn't want to go into, you know, and I didn't want to draw attention to myself. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to, you know, get all the names on the ribbons, on the flags, and go push my stroller and do what I felt needed to be done.
Yeah. And you mentioned GPS. So how did that work?
I had a special program written that had the exact chronological order of the deaths of the names that I had on the flags. So I was very detail oriented in my plans. The flags were numbered, exact order of death, and the program too on my phone. So when I planted a flag, it would come up on my phone and I would assign a location to that. And it immediately went to the website.
So you have a website that records exactly which name is associated with which mile marker, which flag.
Exactly. Yeah. On the Project America Run site, for example, when I did in May, the last 300 miles in Traverse Park, you can go to that site and type in any friend, family member from Afghanistan, Iraq, their name will come up and Google Maps will zoom in and show you right where it was placed.
Mm.
Yeah.
What was it like while you were doing this? What were you going through?
It was a fantastic experience, you know, because every day was new. So there wasn't this well of experience that I would dip into because the experience was changing every day and I was learning something every day. But around every corner, there was new scenery, there was new asphalt, there was new people. Every town was different. The reaction from people were different. Many times they had no idea what I was doing. I was just a crazy guy pushing a stroller along the highway, mm-hmm. probably getting in the way of them on their way to work. But it was a fantastic experience.
There must have been some really incredible highs and lows given the scenery, but also the emotional roller coaster you were going through.
There would be many, because I never knew who was watching on the website, because I had a spot beacon on my stroller so they could, you know, virtually track me. And I never knew who was watching. I never knew if I came around a corner, there'd be a car up alongside the road situation that might arise with that person. Were they a good person or was this something I might want to prepare for? But they were quite emotional experiences, especially if parents who got wind of it stopped out, you know, and just wanted to say thank you. And yeah.
What was it like staying with host families who you'd never met?
Well, that's probably the best I ever ate in my life. Yeah. It was quite unique because really we would set this up a year in advance, and for someone to open their doors to a guy pushing a stroller, putting flags in the ground, who's going to come into your town when he says he is, but you don't think he is. That was really a special, unique thing, because that says a lot about the people across the country. Often, you know, we get portrayed as being whatever, but people were always good.
Yeah, especially those who are in Maine towards the end of the first route, wondering, is he going to be here on time, a day early, a day late? But you had a very punctual, rigid schedule.
Yeah, once the hosts were up, I had to be where I was supposed to be at that time of the day. And if I was injured or I fell behind, it just trickled down and created a domino effect.
Can you describe the route you took? You were on highways for this particular trip. You were mainly on streets, other cars and stuff. Were you going through cities or?
Yeah, I started in Astoria and I took basically a northern route across the country, and that was designed to avoid summer storms down in Oklahoma, Kansas. So I stayed up north and came, and because of the number of casualties, the route had to, it looks like an EKG because I had to finish water to water. It couldn't be a straight line, but I stayed basically on blue highways, no interstates, skirted large cities, Cleveland, Chicago, stuff like that. Basically was out in the middle of nowhere all the way across.
Yeah, it's a very circuitous route, not a straight line. It
looks exactly,
like,
yeah.
It looks like some of the long distance trails that go around mountains for no reason.
Yeah.
So how did the hosts come to you, or did you and your team solicit them? How did you connect with them?
Well, in advance, you know, the route was drawn out meticulously on the computer, and we would do a 30-mile section, made sure that it ended at a junction of two roads. Then we would draw a 25-mile circle around that, look at the towns within there, then call Chamber of Commerce, a bank, a high school, prominent things within a community. And normally the person who answered the phone, once they were told what was going on, they would be the ones that would want a host. They're like, okay, yeah, sure. Well, if you get here, we'll put you up. But that's how we did it. And that was, you know, done way in advance. So when I left, everything was into place because time was of the essence. When you end at 3:30 in the afternoon, it couldn't be in the middle of a cornfield in Iowa going, where am I going to stay tonight? I had to look up, know that that person was there, know that I would get dropped off in the morning, continue on.
Where, or how long did it take you to plan this out?
The first one took 2 years.
Yeah.
To plan it out. Yeah.
And so self-supported, you're going along the way. You've got a lot of data stored in a smartphone or something that you're keeping in communication with lists of people as you're progressing.
Yes. Yeah. So I had my host host person for that day. My names on the flags. I had a person remotely handling any media request so that I wasn't disrupted from what I was doing. And my wife was in charge of shipping priority boxes that had flags in them, clothing and whatever. So when I left, my little man cave at home looked like a UPS center. Boxes had dates on them. They needed to be shipped, similar to hiking on a long trail.
How did it feel at the end?
Oh, it was tough. I've talked to numerous vets at trail running camps, and it was very similar. We related to each other very well in the fact that you come back home and you feel displaced. And because every day is kind of determined, a new experience versus adrenaline, this excitement, and then you come home and it's done. Mm-hmm. And I remember for many months standing in the front window in the living room looking at Lake Ponderay and Hope and just kind of lost and went through a period of depression, not so much for what had taken place or the purpose of the run, but all of a sudden it was done. I had like no direction on where to go.
So how did that impact you as far as going forward with other projects?
It sometimes, I just read a great book called The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. And that obstacle, that sense of being lost, was the way that opened the door to the next project.
So if you're just tuning in, this is 88.5 KRFY in Ponderay, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. We're here with Mike Arrett talking about long-distance trail running, running for the Project America run. And I think Jack has another question.
Jack does have another question. So this was project. We've mostly been talking now about Project America Run, and at the time that was what it was called. Now there's been Project America Run 2 as well. That's your more recent run. And what was that?
Number two, actually, number one was strictly Iraq, and they were two different entities. And so originally I was going to do one, but when I got done, I was getting emails from families who couldn't find a flag on the website. Mm. Well, it's because their son or daughter was in Afghanistan. Like, oh, so on the John Muir Trail, my buddy says, you got to do Afghanistan. So half the fatalities. So I was able to go from Minnesota to Galveston and completed that in 2012. And then after number two, there was 300 additional fatalities over since 2010. So I kind of felt, we need to take care of those. And hence number three came up, circling Traverse Park over Memorial Day week. And the last flag place there was David Lyon from Sandpoint. Mm. So then I was completely caught up and, I closed the book on those three chapters. And, I'm sure there'll be future fatalities, and there has, but my intent is always clear. The memorial is forever.
So that's the close of one chapter or one book, but it seems like it's opened up next, Team Red, White, and Blue. Tell us about that project.
It was introduced to Team RWB when they asked me to come down to their trail running camp down in Texas. And they enrich veterans' lives through physical activity within a community. So it's different than a Wounded Warrior or some of the other vet organizations. It's all about physical activity. And got involved with them. I've met a number of vets, done some great outdoor adventures with them and introduced them to running. And yeah, it's been good.
And so those are local chapters that operate on a personal level?
Yes, nationwide, you'll have a community level. And then that will evolve into a chapter, which might be, for us, could be Coeur d'Alene, Spokane, Sandpoint, to a much larger area. And basically, it's just a bunch of us who get together to do things outside, sometimes just to sit around and have a beer, sometimes just to talk. And it's transformed a lot of their lives nationwide.
It sounds like it would be very transformative work. You've watched some lives grow and change then?
Oh, absolutely. I talked to a guy that we were in the same room down in Texas, the trail running camp. And I asked him, I said, you know, how did RWB help you? He said, well, I was living in San Antonio actually. And he said, I was sitting there one night. I had about four beers. I pulled out my 45. I had it to my head. And I said, you know, this is just, I don't need this anymore. I think I'll have another beer before I pull the trigger. And he goes down to the convenience store to buy some more beer. And the guy in front of him is wearing an RWB shirt. And on the back of it says, enriching veterans' lives through physical activity. He's like, dude, what's this about? And they find out they have both served in Afghanistan. He says, hey, we just get together. You know, tomorrow we're going to be down at the park. We're going to do a little workout, 30, 40 minutes, maybe go have some pizza. You want to go? Okay. Literally changed his life, saved his life.
Wow.
And he became involved in RWB. But, you know, what's the chances that he doesn't quench his thirst? You know, that he pulls the trigger and ends up in a store and meets an RWB guy, changes his life. He influences many other vets. And it ends well.
I would imagine it's changed your life.
It has. You know, I think all too often we get a little compartmentalized in our own life and a little self-absorbed in our own lives. And it's helped me to stay open to the people around me. Yeah.
It's a national organization. Is it big here in Sandpoint, or do you?
No, very small. You know, a lot of groups nationwide. You know, you might only find just a handful of people, and in Sandpoint here, there is just a very small group. You know, hopefully it'll grow. And you know, as I'm out and I got my RWB shirt on, I meet a lot of other people, invite them to run 7B, at least to the site, so they can come out and do stuff with us. And I just think, you know, as a trainer and a coach, physical activity and mental activity is what keeps us healthy.
So what's the locally here, the veteran, are they veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan, or are some of them older veterans of even Vietnam or Korea?
It seems to be mostly the younger guys, Iraq, Afghanistan. Yeah.
You have been running long distance since that first marathon in Greece, you said, right?
Yes.
Back in the 80s?
1980,
exactly. So since then, I mean, many people run marathons, not many people run all the way across the country. What was the... Before you started Project America Run, the first one, had you done, or you know, were you prepared for that? Had you done a lot of longer distance runs, or was?
I had done numerous, you know, marathons and 50 milers and some 100 milers, but nothing can prepare you for going across the country. And I would be asked that. People are like, you know, how do you train for that? Well, your body will adapt because it's a magnificent machine. And it was really no different than if somebody put me in a ditch with a shovel and the first day I'm really sore. After about a week, you know, I can do my 8, 10, 12 hours. So it was like that with the run. My body just changed. It adapted to the stress that was put on it. I moved a little slower in the beginning than I would, and it all worked out well. So you have to look at it as a day by day thing instead of the big picture, because that will overwhelm you.
Yeah.
What other ways did your trail running experience help you or guide you through the Project Run America?
I would say just maybe mentally, being able just to stay out for long periods of time alone. And it was interesting that whole time across the country, never listened to music once.
Wow.
So all I really heard was wind blowing through the weeds, cars going by, the wheels going around and around.
The days were so full too. I know when I've done long distance hiking, you fall out of touch with the cultural things that are going on. Did that happen?
Oh, absolutely. You lose touch, like you said, with what's going on in the real world. And so my day was reduced to getting up, moving, putting a flag, you know, for 6-8 hours, talking to someone about their community, because everybody would love to talk about where they live, but I had no idea what was going on in the real world.
But then you're very in touch with what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
You are listening to 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio. It's the morning show with our guest, Mike Arrett, who we will return to in just a moment. But first, how about a little musical break? And in keeping with the theme, who here likes the Doobie Brothers? We have a few running songs queued up, and we could take our pick. But I think we'll do that Doobie Brothers one, because that's the one I'm not as familiar with, Phil.
That's a favorite of mine. So
is it? Yeah. This is from Taking It to the Streets, and it is a song called "It Keeps You Running." We'll be right back with more of our conversation with Mike Arrett. Stick around. Thanks for listening to the KRFY Morning Show. For copyright reasons, we can't reproduce protected music on the podcast edition of the Morning Show. But feel free to tune in live at 8 a.m. at 88.5 on your radio dial, or listen anywhere in the world by streaming us through our website, krfy.org. If you listen live, you can hear the full program, including musical breaks. While you're visiting krfy.org, consider tapping that donate button and help keep KRFY providing unique quality radio in North Idaho. Thanks for your support. We now return to the show. That's the Doobie Brothers. It Keeps You Running, the name of that track. Now, we played that because running is the topic of conversation today.
And there's always something that keeps each of us running, whether we're out doing a trail run or a long distance run or just running in our lives. And so we're here talking with Mike Arrett, local trail runner guru, creator of Project America Runs, and local coordinator for Project Red, White, and Blue. And we've been listening to some of the things that keeps him running. And I want to shift here to 7B, but as we do that, the running group that Mike created here, we talked at the break a little bit about how Project 7B helped out with the last Travis Park run. Mike, tell us a little bit more about how they stepped into some challenges there for you.
Well, that run was over Memorial Day week, and it was the last 300 fatalities that need to be accounted for. And so I was circling the park, and about 200 miles in, I had some really bad issues with my ankle and was reduced to kind of hobbling along. And I realized I wasn't going to get done by Memorial Day morning at 10 o'clock, which was the scheduled last flag of David Lyons. And so I had always done a mile for each name, each person. But I knew that that was about to change. So I called up my friends from Run 7B and said, hey, it's time to pass the torch. And they came down and told them that each flags they were carrying was just as important as if I carried it, and that they were part of it now. And they knocked out close to 100 miles so that we could finish on time. And it turned out to be really well. And just seeing a look on their face and how much it meant to them to be part of it made it all worthwhile.
How did that feel to you to let go of the flags yourself?
I kind of equate it to when my daughter went off to college. You know, you kind of just got to cut the cord. And but then my wife said, you know, had you kept doing what you were doing or felt that you had to go back and do another whatever many miles on your own just to personally say you've done it, then it's all about you. And it wasn't about you. It was about the name on the flag. And so, yeah, it was hard to pass that flag over, but it passed very quickly.
It sounds like the perfect example for the book you mentioned earlier, The Obstacle is the Way.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. It just opened, you got this huge obstacle. I'm not going to be able to finish on time. My ankle, I'm having physical problems. And instead of looking at it as, well, okay, maybe we just stop. No, you find a way to make it work. And that's what was prevalent out on the road, whether it was a flat tire, whether it was a knee that was bothering me or Achilles out on the highway. You just make it work. You find a way to make it work.
It's a wonderful sense of community that you're helping to build here. And I think it's a thing that ties a lot of us to North Idaho. Tell us about Project 7B, the running club.
Oh, it was, Facebook has become so huge in everybody's life and, and probably not for some people, and that's okay. But it's a great social media outlet. And so I decided within our community, I always have been intrigued by the Ski 7B and the Bike 7B hats or bumper stickers I saw around. I said, well, shoot, I'm gonna snatch up Run 7B. And so I started a Facebook page called Run 7B. And originally there was maybe 10 people, and now it's swelled to almost 150. Of which I probably know most of them, maybe not. There's probably 25, 30 active people, but it's just a social site so that no one has to go out and run alone. And no one has to do trails. They can do asphalt, they can do bum jungle, they can do traverse, whatever. But if you're doing something, you could post it, you could find other people to go with you, and it's all worked out well.
So it's a way to connect people.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Are there regular runs, training runs, organized events?
Normally, every weekend, something is posted of a trail, because the summers, let's face it, they're kind of short. We want to get outside. And if we can get on a trail somewhere, that's the best. So right throughout the summer and fall, we post a lot of trail stuff every weekend or something during the week.
Now, I've heard from friends who have been part of it that there's even sometimes informal competitions. At least they seem to go out and compete against each other. Maybe you don't know about that.
But that must be from those guys like Jim Mellon. Yeah. Jim, are you listening? Is there something I don't know about?
Yeah, tell us about some of the folks who do participate. I think there's some great stories in there.
There is. It's interesting. Sometimes people feel that age is a limitation, and it really isn't. I mean, you're as old as you want to be, and that's the bottom line. There's a wonderful gal in town, Carol Wright. She's 74 years old. I've been coaching her for 4 years now. Started running around the age of 70. And has been to the Boston Marathon qualified. She's done a 25K trail race at Big Sky, Montana, up in Rosslyn, BC. And it's such an inspiration to a lot of her friends and people in the community who don't know her, who see her out. And you have a guy, Irv Magici, who just turned 70, did his first Ironman, which is a 2.5 mile swim, 112 mile bike, and 26 mile marathon all in one day over in Coeur d'Alene. And so age isn't a limiting factor. And, Irv is an inspiration. We were at the finish, and to see him coming down at 10 o'clock at night finishing was really, really cool. And, But where there's one mountain, you get over that one, there's another one.
Right. So it's not about the competition for most of the folks. It's about getting out there, much like the other project you described.
Absolutely. I think we were meant to be outside. More and more people are realizing that, whether you're a walker, a skier, biker. But, with the Run 7B, it really opens their eyes to the trails in North Idaho, whether it's up in Bonners or down across the border into Montana or here in the Cabinets. They really enjoy getting out.
How long has it been in existence?
For about a year now.
About a year. So you went through a first winter. Did they don snowshoes?
Yes, it was. It's a year-round thing. The door's always there, and you got to open it, whether it's raining, snowing, or whatever. But we would meet on weekly, on the weekends, and do snowshoes up in the Cabinets. And over in Travers, I'd stomp out a little area and we'd do snowshoes, and up at Schweitzer. Yep.
And we were talking a few days ago, Mike, you've managed to get a number of them to volunteer and come out to help clear some trails. Tell us about that.
Well, there is, we all feel, and I speak for everybody because I think I'm very accurate on this, that we want to give back in some way. So if we enjoy being out on the trails, and we appreciate whoever built them, whether it's in Schweitzer and Bonner or wherever. So recently I had put on a trail event over in the Cabinets in Hope, and the 7B people came out, I believe we had 8 of us. And cumulative, we ended up doing 22 miles of trail, eliminating the trees and clearing that up and helped the Forest Service out, which we're real shorthanded up here.
Yeah, they're always looking for volunteers, and especially Excellent. Those who have a lot of energy and endurance. It's a perfect fit.
I don't know if we had energy at the end of the day.
No. So what are the future plans for 7B? Where does it go from here? Does it continue to grow?
It does. You know, I'm working on expanding the website a little bit and including some nutritional help for people. Just as a trainer at SWAC, you know, we'll never be able to out-exercise bad nutrition. And that's what I tell people. And that's the one thing I get asked about a lot is how can I eat better? How can I lose weight? Well, one, maybe just get outside to start. But looking to expand the website and put more informative stuff up there, whether it's nutrition, training, equipment, trails. You know, there's a whole array of subject matter to cover. And continue to put on trail events.
I got a question. You guys probably know this. Everyone else in the room is a long distance runner, but not me. And you were mentioning that during your Project America run, you ate better than you ever had. What's an average meal like when you're doing that kind of physical activity? Like what did you eat, or maybe not an average? What were you eating at night? Can you describe one meal? How much do you have to eat?
I was doing about 5,000 calories a day. A host family, my wife would contact them a couple of days out, and they all wanted to give me runner type food, or what they viewed as runner type food.
Spaghetti.
Spaghetti. She said, don't give him spaghetti. Do not give him spaghetti. So normally it would be a lot of fresh meat, chicken, fish, steak, fresh veggies. If she just said veggies, you might get corn in a can. So there was a lot of salads, a lot of fruit salads, fresh fruit, fresh vegetables, protein. Protein was absolutely necessary for the repair and recovery that I needed for the next day. On both runs combined, it was a total of 100 gallons, accurate measurement of chocolate milk that I drank. I did a quart each day when I got done. And 60 gallons on the first one, 40 gallons on the second, 323 Starbucks mocha frappuccinos that I would pick up at a gas station during the day as I went through. So I did a lot of like liquid calories. But yep, a lot of fresh meat, fresh fruit, fresh veggies.
Huh. The mocha frappuccino, that surprises me.
And I do not drink them on a regular basis.
Yeah.
But under those circumstances, yep, and I kept track of everyone.
Wow.
Fuel for the runner.
But yeah.
So you've mentioned a couple times your personal coaching, and again, from local reference, know that you're moving in that direction. How did you get started doing that?
And it was interesting. I had Irv was actually training for an event, and he asked for a little help, and then friends of my wife, and then it just kind of evolved into there. And then I got thinking about the last 40 years and the knowledge that's been acquired, and I'm not an absolutist. My way is not necessarily the right way, but I have a good sense of direction. I always had a good intuition for people and being able to read people, because anybody could write a program. You can get online and learn how to run a 5K, but being able to interact with a person, to give them feedback, hold them accountable, give them some guidance, whether it's mentally and physically, I saw that I kind of had this special talent for that, where people told me I did, and then it evolved into coaching.
Motivation,
absolutely, yeah.
We could all use that sometimes.
You know, I love when someone says, you know, my knees are bad, I can't do this. I said, you know what? Look at my legs. You see these zipper scars? Yeah. You know, let's talk about what you can do. Yeah.
And go ahead, Jack.
No, you mentioned that, and that's not something we've talked about, but you did. I guess I'm not too aware of what clubfoot means, but is it unusual to see major runners who were born with club feet?
It probably is. I mean, you notice it immediately in children that are just learning to walk. They'll be pigeon-toed, mm-hmm. and their knees will come in and almost touch. So they're kind of walking on the inside of their arches. So I had difficulties walking as a child till around the age of 4. And then a doctor in Rockford, Illinois, performed surgery where my bones in my lower leg were broken in both legs and rotated out. So it pulled my knees out, and then my ankles were fused so on the outside to keep my feet out. So corrective shoes, braces. So I've never sprained an ankle. I never will sprain an ankle. Mm-hmm. That's been a plus. Mm. Great gift to have on the trails.
It sounds like you've been relatively serious injury-free.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, you know, as we get older, sometimes we get into the mindset of that we're still 20, that we won't be injured, and then injuries sneak up. So I'm a great advocate of, or very firm advocate of maintenance on your body. And instead of addressing the issue, healing it, forgetting about it until it comes back, you know, let's just keep taking care of ourselves.
So that's some of your personal training and coaching too, then, for others.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So I know recently you were race director for a fund run for Kinnicksu Land Trust. So you're working with some of the nonprofits, and you've drawn on some history of directing races. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. When I was in the Midwest in Illinois, I was for 6 years put on these very small adventure races where there was some biking and some paddling on the Mississippi and some trail running and some map and compass work. And then came out here and started putting on a few local events, the Hope Pie Run, which will be 7 years old now.
Well, that's a fun one.
Yeah.
Tell people about that who might not know.
Yeah, come to the Hope Pie Run last Saturday in April. $5, bring a pie. And it's a 5K. You pick up a plastic fork halfway. When you get done, it's all the pie you can eat.
Yeah, that's a good run.
And we give away dozens of eggs from our chickens and coffee from Evans Brothers. So I helped Kinnicksu Land Trust with their Weathering the Elements activity out at the Idaho Extension. And we probably had 50 people show up. It was an untimed event, so we take race out of the equation, which appeals to a lot of people. You know, we don't feel so competitive then. And I think that's what drew the numbers out.
Right. The emphasis is on the experience.
Exactly, yeah.
So we're running a little short on time, but are there any future projects you want to talk about or tell us more?
Well, I'm about 3/4 of the way through my book. Believe it will be titled Where Roads Meet, and it's about the interaction and the stories along the road. And then next May, I'll be traveling to Wales and running the Spine of Wales from north to south over 5 days. So I'm looking forward to that. So I have a long winter of training.
Yeah, you'll do Mount Snowdon then for sure.
Absolutely.
You've done trail running, not just you're not just a street runner. Right? Yeah. What's the difference? Which do you prefer? How about that?
You know, I think if you look at the term runner, I prefer both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if you love to run, it's just like skiing. If you love to ski, it doesn't matter where you turn your boards. And there's times when I love being on the pavement in the winter when there's snow on the ground. You know, I love being out on the roads. In the summer, it's dirt in the trails. So you know, I love it all.
Well, we'll have to have you back on when the book comes out to read some from it for us.
You are listening to The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio. Morning Show is broadcast every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock a.m. And we've been talking to Mike Arrett about his many experiences in the world of running. Thanks for coming on this morning, Mike.
Mike, you were a great guest. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Should we play a little music before we get into our upcoming events calendar? Yeah,
I think we have some more running themes.
We do. You got one. We've got one queued up here from Neil Young, who this is from the unplugged version of Long May You Run, a song you might be familiar with. Here it is. This is recorded live in 1993 as part of the MTV Unplugged series.
Unplugged seems to fit 7B.
Yeah, you're right. It does. Anyway, here's Neil Young. We'll be back with some upcoming events for the rest of the week and the weekend looking ahead. Stay tuned. The KRFY Morning Show is available as a free download at krfy.org. You can also stream Panhandle Community Radio live from the website and find program schedules and more information about the station. While browsing krfy.org, support the station by clicking the Donate button on the right side of your screen and help keep Panhandle Community Radio commercial-free and a growing community resource.
Neil Young is always great, isn't he, Jack?
Neil Young is terrific, and that is Long May You Run. That was a live version of that recorded in 1993.
Yeah, we hope for all the runners out there who have been engaged with Mike or are just doing running on their own, long may you all run. So tomorrow on the morning show is Chris and Susie. So join hosts Chris Bessler and Susie Perez. Their guests will be high school students Emma Reed and Grania Boyd, who will talk about the upcoming Model Student Union Nations Conference and their fundraiser to support that program. 8 o'clock right here at KRFY 88.5 FM.
That should be a good show. I talked to them I talked to the students, I think, last year around this time, and it's an interesting program.
It's such a great learning model.
Yeah. It's very, very cool. Go ahead.
Thursday, Jack is back with author and adventurer John Turk.
That's right. That's a pre-recorded interview that I just recorded yesterday, and a lot of talking to Mike, brought up some things that John Turk was saying. He's an adventurer who's done some incredible things.
John's a fabulous speaker. I heard him about 5 years ago, and he'll be at the Fall Harvest Festival in Libby this Friday. He'll start out at 1 p.m. at the Capitol Mountain Brewery with a book reading, and then he'll segue over to the Fall Harvest Festival at Riverfront Park there.
Yeah, which sounds like a fun event to me. That's going to be pretty cool. And He was really interesting to talk to. I very much enjoyed that, and you can tune in on Thursday. You won't want to miss it.
No.
Yeah. Go ahead.
For fans of the Tuesday morning show, Julie will be back next week with me in the studio here. We're going to talk with Steve Klatt, Bonner County Director of Waterways, Parks, and Recreation. That's at 8 o'clock next Tuesday.
Oh, that's cool. Nice. Yeah.
He's got a big job.
Yeah, I suppose so. That encompasses quite a bit.
Yeah, from the 4th of July safety issues to the thoroughfare to Upper Priest Lake, a little bit of snowmobile grooming, a lot of trail maintenance. He's got a lot on his palate. And, we'll hear a lot of different things from him. He's an interesting guy.
Mm-hmm. This is also coming up on the morning show very soon, starting at the end of this month. It'll be Election Central here on 88.5 every Wednesday. Susie and Chris are going to be interviewing the candidates for office coming up for the election in November. So you'll want to tune in and become an informed voter by listening to the KRFY Morning Show. Non-KRFY events going on this weekend. You know, just speaking of running, the Scenic Half Marathon is coming up. Yeah. That's a huge event here in town.
Big annual event, and a lot of people are signed up for the half, and there's also a 5K and a 10K.
It
appeals to runners of all types.
Indeed. That's going on it's the 8th annual Scenic Half, and it's this Sunday, September 18th. You can pick up your packets and shirts from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday at Sandpoint City Beach, and check in at this time so you have everything needed to hit the course on Sunday morning. Late registration is still available and will be available on Saturday, September 17th, but no race day registrations are allowed. So,
and all this week, if you're driving around, particularly on Highway 95 or 2, you might see more bike riders than normal. The Weekended Ride, which is the Selkirk loop around the Selkirk Mountains, is going on. So give them a wide berth.
Yeah, I saw that. I was a little too busy, but that one kind of appealed to me. I thought that looks like a really cool loop that they're going to do.
350-mile loop on bikes.
Right. And the distance was a little intimidating, too. I didn't have too hard a time saying no. But but it does look, I mean, beautiful. And what an experience that must be. Maybe next year or 3 years from now when I'm in better shape.
Well, perhaps this weekend's movie at the Panada, a tribute to Gene Wilder, Blazing Saddles.
Yeah, that's I am looking forward to that. I think it's actually it's Thursday,
15th and 16th. So Thursday and Friday.
Thursday and Friday. Perfect. The Blazing Saddles has of course been called one of the funniest movies ever made. I think it came out in the early 70s, and Mel Brooks, Gene Wilder, Cleavon Little as Bart, and
a real ensemble cast.
Yes. Anyway, that's the 15th and 16th as in tribute to a memorial for the recently passed Gene Wilder. That's at the Panada. Panada.org is your source for more information about that. Coming up as well this weekend, we've got live music at the Poor Authority, at the Winery, at the McDuff's Brew Hall, the Beer Hall, and on this Friday, Devin Wade is performing, and he's a country music artist who calls Sandpoint home. He's very good. I'd like to get some of his music into the station. Actually, we don't have any.
On the entertainment calendar, we have Gallagher coming next week for his last Smash tour.
That's right.
Tuesday. I think Susie's interviewing him live either Monday afternoon or Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah. Stay tuned for more details about that. We'll be sure to get that. But you will be able to hear Gallagher before you see him at the Panada, who's coming next week.
Now, the studio will be a no watermelon zone for that interview, right?
Right. Well, we've got some tarps. Maybe we'll put up tarps and you might be able to hear the watermelon smash. We're about out of time. That happened fast.
That was a fun hour, Jack. Thanks for sitting in for Susie.
Stay tuned for Bird Note and then Otis Eclectic Mix all day long after that, right here on 88.5 KRFY Ponderay.